The wind up here did not blow, it bit. It tore through the skeletal ribs of the unfinished railway, snatching at Pearl's coat and trying to peel her off the iron grating. She pressed herself against the cold steel, her breath coming in short white clouds that vanished instantly into the dark. Below her, the city sprawled like a spilled box of matches, thousands of tiny yellow lights trembling in the wet air. Above her, nothing but the black void and the jagged silhouette of the unfinished arches against the storm-choked sky. She had climbed three flights of scaffolding to reach this vantage point, her fingers numb inside her leather gloves, her boots slick with the condensation that dripped from the rivets above. The blueprints were heavy in her canvas tube, digging into her ribs like a second bruise, a physical reminder of the weight she carried. Not just paper and ink, but lives. Lives measured in inches of track and sense of fare. Lives that ended when the contracts were signed and the safety inspections were ignored. Pearl adjusted her grip on the .32 revolver at her hip. It felt small against the vastness of the structure, a toy weapon in a war zone of steel and steam. She checked the cylinder again, two rounds. She had used one on the guard at the base of the tower, a man who had looked at her with eyes that saw only a woman out of place, out of time, out of place entirely. He had not screamed. He had simply slumped, and she had caught him before he hit the ground, lowering him gently to the dirt. It was a mercy, perhaps, or a mistake. She did not have time to decide which. A sound broke the rhythmic drumming of the rain. Not the wind, not the distant hum of the city, but the specific, deliberate crunch of a boot on gravel. Pearl froze. She pressed herself flatter against the girder, becoming part of the shadow. The beam above her groaned under the stress of the wind, a low, mournful note that masked the approach. Someone else was on the roof. Footsteps slow, measured, aristocratic. They did not belong to a worker, or a guard, or a man in a gray coat. They belonged to a man who walked as if the world owed him a clear path. Sila's Vane stepped out from behind the stack of reinforced concrete beams, shaking water from his woolen overcoat with a disdainful flick of his wrist. He held an umbrella, though the wind threatened to invert it at any moment. He wore a top hat, tilted at an angle that suggested both confidence and calculation. His face was calm, illuminated by the occasional flash of lightning that turned the sky white for a fraction of a second. "Pearl Casey," he said. His voice was smooth, cutting through the roar of the storm like a razor through silk. It never raised in volume, yet it carried. "I wondered how long it would take you to follow the trail." Pearl did not move. She kept her hand near her holster, her muscles coiled. "I didn't follow anything, Mr. Vane. I followed the money. You followed the profit. We met in the middle." Vane smiled. It was a thin, humorless expression that did not reach his eyes. Profit is a matter of perspective, detective. What looks like theft to some looks like efficiency to others. The city is a machine. Machines require oil. They require structure. They require men who understand that progress is not built on sentiment. "It's built on bones," Pearl said, her voice clipped, "and you're using them to grease your wheels." Vane sighed, a sound of genuine disappointment. He took another step closer, his shoes clicking on the wet iron. "You speak with such passion. It reminds me of your father. He had a similar inability to see the bigger picture. He saw corruption where there was only order. He saw enemies where there were only partners. And in the end, did it save him? Did it make him great?" The mention of her father was a calculated strike. Pearl felt the old wound, the one that had never quite healed, tighten in her chest. She had spent her career proving she was not her father, that she was sharper, faster, more capable, that she could operate in the gray areas he had refused to acknowledge. But standing here, facing the man who had manipulated those grays, she felt the weight of his legacy pressing down on her. "My father died because he wouldn't compromise," Pearl said. "I won't die because I won't look away." Vane stopped 10 feet away. The wind whipped his coat around his legs. "Compromise is the price of admission, my dear. You think you can bring me in? With what? A few blueprints? A dead dockworker? The police are not your ally, Pearl. Sergeant Doyle is a tired man who wants to go home to his wife. He will listen to your story, and then he will file it. Because the truth is inconvenient. Because the truth disrupts the flow of commerce." He reached into his inner pocket. Pearl's finger tightened on the trigger. But he did not draw a weapon. He drew a small, leather-bound notebook. He tossed it onto the metal grating between them. It slid across the wet surface, stopping at the edge of the girder where Pearl stood. The ledger, Vane said. All of it. The bribes, the kickbacks, the safety violations. Everything I have done to build this empire, I am giving it to you. Pearl blinked, the rain streamed down her face, stinging her eyes. Why? Because I am a generous man, Vane said. And because I know you, you want to prove yourself. You want to be more than the daughter of a disgraced detective. This ledger will make you a hero. It will clear your name. It will secure your position. All you have to do is take it. Pearl stared at the book. It was small, unassuming, black leather, worn at the edges. It contained the evidence that could bring down Selah's Vane. It contained the names of every corrupt official, every compromised judge, every silenced witness. It was the key to justice. But it was also a trap. Pearl had seen Vane's type before. Men who thought they could buy loyalty, who thought they could control the narrative. If she took the ledger, she became dependent on him. She became his creation. And if she refused, he would deny everything, claiming she had stolen it, that she was unstable, that she was chasing ghosts. I don't trust you, Pearl said. Trust is irrelevant, Vane replied. Action is what matters. Take the ledger and walk away, go to Doyle, let him handle the paperwork, let the system do its work, or stay here and fight me, and we both know how that ends. He spread his arms wide, gesturing to the storm, to the city below, to the vast, indifferent darkness. The city does not care about your morals, Pearl. It cares about power, and power belongs to those who take it. Pearl looked at the ledger. Then she looked at Vane. She saw the greed in his eyes, the arrogance, the absolute certainty that he was untouchable. He believed he had already won. He believed she was just another piece on his board, to be moved or sacrificed as needed. He had forgotten one thing. Pearl was not his piece. She was the variable he had failed to calculate. You're right, Pearl said softly. The city doesn't care about morals, it cares about survival. Vane nodded, satisfied. Then take it. Pearl stepped forward. Her boot clicked on the iron. She reached out, her hand hovering over the ledger. Vane watched her, his smile widening slightly. He expected her to pick it up. He expected her to turn and leave. Instead, Pearl kicked the ledger. It flew off the edge of the girder, disappearing into the dark abyss below. Vane's smile vanished. His eyes widened, shock rippling across his face like a crack in glass. What have you done? I didn't trust you, Pearl said, her voice hard as steel. And I didn't trust the system to handle it, so I'm handling it myself. Vane lunged. He moved with surprising speed for a man of his age, his hand shooting out to grab Pearl's throat. Pearl twisted, ducking under his arm, and drove her elbow into his kidney. Vane grunted, stumbling forward, but he recovered instantly. He spun, swinging a backhand that caught Pearl on the cheek, spinning her around. Pearl hit the wet iron hard, the breath knocked out of her lungs. She rolled, coming up on one knee, drawing her revolver, but Vane was already on her. He kicked the gun from her hand, sending it skittering across the roof, lost in the shadows. They grappled, two figures silhouetted against the lightning. Vane was stronger, fueled by rage and entitlement. He pinned Pearl against the girder, his hands closing around her neck. His grip was iron. Pearl clawed at his wrists, her fingers slipping on his wet sleeves. She couldn't breathe. The world began to tunnel. Give me the key, Vane hissed, his face inches from hers. His breath smelled of expensive tobacco and decay. Give me the damn key, you foolish girl. Pearl's vision blurred. She thought of Thomas Erickson, of Alina Rossi, of the men in gray coats, of her father, standing alone in the rain, refusing to compromise. She thought of the key. It was not in her pocket. She had left it behind, days ago, in a gutter grate. But she had not come alone. She had come prepared. With her last ounce of strength, Pearl drove her knee into Vane's groin. He gasped, loosening his grip for a fraction of a second. Pearl twisted, breaking free, and slammed her shoulder into his chest. Vane staggered back off balance. Pearl grabbed a loose length of rebar from a nearby pile, swinging it with all her might. It connected with Vane's shoulder, sending him crashing backward. He slipped on the wet iron, his feet flailing for purchase. He fell. But he did not fall far. His hand caught the edge of a lower beam, arresting his descent. He hung there, dangling 50 feet above the ground, his fingers white-knuckled on the cold steel. He looked up at Pearl, his face a mask of terror and hatred. Help me, he begged. Please, I can give you anything, money, power, your father's reputation, just help me. Pearl looked down at him. She saw the greed, the desperation, the sheer human fragility beneath the veneer of power. She felt no pity, only a cold, hard clarity. You wanted to monopolize the transit contracts, Pearl said, her voice steady despite the pain in her ribs. You wanted to control the flow of people, of goods, of lives. You thought you were above the rules, above the consequences. She leaned against the girder, catching her breath. The rain continued to fall, washing the blood from her cheek, mixing with the tears she refused to shed. But you forgot one thing, Silas. Greed is a heavy burden, and gravity is inevitable. Vane screamed, his fingers slipping. The beam groaned under his weight. Pearl, please, I am a partner, I am a friend. You were never my friend, Pearl said. She turned away. She walked toward the edge of the roof, where the ladder descended into the darkness. She did not look back. She heard the snap of metal, the shout of a man realizing his time had run out, and then the sound of his body hitting the ground far below. A thud, muffled by the rain and the distance. Pearl stood at the edge, looking down into the void. The city stretched out before her, vast and indifferent. The lights continued to twinkle, the trains continued to run, the people continued to live. The system would continue to grind, to consume, to produce. But she had broken a gear. She retrieved her revolver from the shadows, checking the cylinder. Two rounds remained. She holstered it, the weight familiar and comforting. She picked up the canvas tube containing the blueprints. They were safe. The evidence was safe. She had no ledger, no written proof of Vane's crimes. The ledger was gone, lost in the dark, but she had the blueprints. She had the witness testimony of the men in the tenements. She had the truth, raw and unvarnished. It might not be enough to convict Vane. It might not be enough to clear her name, but it was enough to start. Pearl descended the ladder, her movements slow and deliberate. Each rung was a step away from the past, toward a future she had to forge herself. She would go to Doyle. She would tell him what she had seen. She would tell him about the ledger, about the deal, about the fall. He might not believe her. He might bury the report. But she would keep the blueprints, their red X's stark in the gloom. She would keep the story alive. As she reached the ground level, the rain had softened to a drizzle. The air smelled of wet stone and exhaust. The city was waking up, or perhaps it was just refusing to sleep. Pearl pulled her coat tighter around her and walked toward the street. She passed a newspaper stand, the vendor sleeping under a tarp. She passed a diner, the neon sign buzzing with a dying flicker. She passed a group of men in gray coats, standing in the shadows, watching. They did not approach. They did not interfere. They simply watched, waiting to see what she would do next. Pearl met their gaze. She did not look away. She walked past them, her head high, her steps firm. She was no longer running. She was no longer hiding. She was Pearl Casey, and she was just getting started. The key was gone, taken by Holloway's heavy hand. The ledger lay in ashes, its secrets turned to soot. But the truth remained, etched in the blueprints she still clutched. For now, that was enough. She turned the corner onto Broom Street, the weight of the blueprints pressing against her hip as the gray morning swallowed her whole. The wind dying down to leave a silence heavier than the storm, while the city above began to stir, waking to the work that had been handed down to it. The key was gone, taken by Holloway's heavy hand. The ledger was lost in the dark below, but she would find it, retrieve it, and burn it as the workers deserved, saving them from Vane's greed without letting the law become another tool of the powerful. For now, the blueprints she still clutched were enough.